Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
There is this series in the Tribune, two episodes of which have been published so far, two more to come, about how justice is delayed in Cook County. It's written by Joe Marr and Megan Crapo. And just a couple of notes from the articles. They tell the story of Jorge Martinez. For nearly 9 years, they write, he had been in Cook County limbo, locked up on a murder charge with no trial date in sight. He still doesn't have one. And his case, while extreme, is not unique. The majority of murder cases in Cook County take 4 years or longer to resolve. Defendants presumed innocent are stuck in jail. Witnesses disappear. Victims' families wait and wait for whatever small measure of closure the system can offer. County leaders seem unwilling or unable to tackle the comprehensive fixes that would help. Here's a paragraph. It can take years for prosecutors to track down and turn over relevant potential evidence, from police reports to forensics. Lawyers file requests that judges don't rule on for months or years, sometimes because police officers simply don't show up in court, sometimes for no clear reason at all. County doctors blow past deadlines to perform defendants' mental health examinations. As cases drag on, it becomes more likely that an attorney or judge will leave and the newcomer will simply have to start almost from scratch. How discouraging is that? Megan Crapo joins us now on WGN. Hi, Megan. How have you been?
I've been okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Did you guys know that this was out there all along and finally decided to tell the story, or what gave you the idea to go down this lengthy path?
Well, listen, I covered Cook County criminal courts full time for more than 5 years. And it's not a secret that cases here tend to take longer than cases in other jurisdictions. That's sort of a known factor. In fact, there's been a lot of great reporting on that over the years, and there's been research looking into it for decades. We found some reports from researchers going back years and years and years. This is not a secret, right? But I think what we wanted to accomplish is a comprehensive look, trying to figure out why. And I think what we've found is that while the delays cause problems, right, a lot of pain for a lot of people, really they are actually a symptom of a lot of deeper problems on a lot of levels.
What are you talking about there?
Well, you outlined it in the quote you just read out from the story. I mean, at every step of a case, there's an opportunity for things to drag. It does not take so long in other jurisdictions for prosecutors to gather basic evidence, right? That's the first phase of a case. There's not a whole lot that can happen until both the prosecutors and the defense have a comprehensive set of, you know, what might come in at trial. But here that takes years. The city's inspector general has found that the mechanism by which police in Chicago turn over records when requested by attorneys, that mechanism is broken. It's basically a shambles. That means attorneys have to send subpoena after subpoena for months and months, maybe even years. They're never quite sure when they have it all.
You tell the story of Antonio Gaston. Current status, prosecutors indicated that they completed discovery in his case in 2018, some 6 years after his arrest. He has been in custody, awaiting trial for more than a decade. You mentioned that they'll need for a case things like copies of police reports, videos, cell phone data, lab tests, hospital records, all kinds of evidence. It sounds like a lot of busy work that maybe people just don't like doing. There's a lot of busy work I'm supposed to do sometimes, and I don't get it done on time because it's no fun. And then they got to prod me. But as a result of my lack of energy, nobody's sitting in jail. It's amazing to me that the system allows this to happen.
I think, you know, what I want to stay away from here is, you know, any kind of indication that, oh, it's just that people aren't working hard, right? And obviously, you know, you're going to have everyone across the spectrum. Some attorneys work very hard. Some people maybe not so much. But I wanted to try to look at this systemically, right? Like, what are the guardrails in place to keep this from happening? Where are the people from the top saying, hey, here are the deadlines that need to be followed? And that, I think, is where you see a lot of the breakdown on a broader level.
I'll ask you about that. But how is it that these people don't post bail and get out and await trial free?
Well, when we look specifically at murder cases, and it's a lot less likely that you'll have the opportunity to get out on bail at all for a serious crime like murder.
So you have to be incarcerated until your trial date.
If you don't get bail, then yes, that's correct.
If you don't get bail, and maybe the judges are less likely to if you're up for murder and it looks bad for your case, like maybe you did it.
Right.
Well, what about that then? I'm sorry that this is happening, but I wonder if in the back of people's minds they're thinking, but the guy probably did it anyway, so just keep him in jail. Is that part of what's happening there?
There might be an element of that, right? And you know, I think what we heard over and over from attorneys who have been in the system for quite a while is that, you know, these waits can be very bad for the defendant, him or herself, right? You're stuck in jail without any real opportunity to get released. They can be good for the defense, right? Because witnesses' memories might fade, they might disappear. You might just, you know, want to see what happens after years and years and years. However, I would push back a little bit on this idea that, well, you know, they probably did it, so whatever, they're just going to be in jail anyway. I'd say, first of all, when we talked to defendants who were locked up pretrial and when we talked to the Cook County Sheriff's Office, which runs the jail, they basically told us that when you're locked up without any out date, without any sense of when there might be any kind of traction, that's a particular kind of pain, right? That's a particular kind of mental health issue. And when people are locked up like that without an out date, you know, the sheriff told us that they see more behavioral issues, they see more mental health issues the longer people stay in this facility that's not meant for long-term living.
You said the majority of the cases take 4 years or more to prosecute, to come to an end date. Am I reading that correctly?
That's right. That's the median. It's more than 4 years now. Median obviously meaning that half are going to take less time and half are going to take more time.
Walk me through a scenario like, okay, the guy's been arrested. Now the clock is starting because he's in jail. And then the police gather evidence, maybe shell casings in the street, and they interview people. And then they presumably gather enough evidence to present a case. He gets indicted and he goes to trial. Why does that take 4 years? Tell me a story or help me with this.
Well, sure. I think that when you are first arrested or when prosecutors first bring a charge, yes, they need to have enough evidence in hand in order to sustain that charge. That doesn't mean they have all of the potential evidence that could be relevant, right? And it doesn't mean that they have all of it in the correct, you know, formats, for example, even on the most basic level. I mean, for example, you're going to get these days potentially dozens, if not hundreds of hours of video evidence in a case, right? That takes a long time to gather. It takes a long time to turn over. It takes a really long time to view. And look, I mean, it can take a really long time even just to get it, that first step across the starting line from whoever owns the video over to prosecutors, right, okay, who then need to turn it over to defense.
So stop right there. Right. Think about that. We all jump from the crime to the video on TV to the courtroom. Boom, they got him. But think about that. Hundreds of cameras. You got to knock on doors. Hey, can we get the video? All right, where's the video? How do I get it? Download it, whatever. Now I've got hundreds of hours of video. Now I got to watch it. Now I've got to find the crime in action. Now I have to edit it so maybe it's presentable. And that, what I just described, I would imagine could take weeks for an individual to do, right?
Sure. And there are a lot of cameras in Chicago in particular, right? But I think a lot of what you're saying would apply around the country, right? I mean, there's a lot of video surveillance, a lot of Ring cameras, a lot of cell phone cameras, a lot of body cameras in a lot of jurisdictions. But there's something about Cook County where it just takes a lot longer. This is not the kind of timing that we're seeing in New York, LA, Philadelphia.
Okay, so then they've rounded up the video. Just keep walking me through this, though. I mean,
sure.
What else do they need to gather, and what else are the stumbling blocks?
Well, basic police paperwork. There's going to be reams of it, right? And when you send a subpoena to the police department saying, hey, send me everything under this particular records division number, what you get back might not actually be complete. You know, you go over it, you see, oh, they towed someone's car. There's going to be a tow report associated, right? We didn't get the tow report. Where's the tow report? You got to chase that down. Oh, they stopped someone's car for an investigatory stop. We don't see the investigatory stop report. We got to chase that down. And it becomes, you know, as you find what's missing going through these reams of documents, you got to chase more reams of documents. And, you know, when I talked to prosecutors and former prosecutors, they described a real headache just and a real tension trying to make sure that what they have is actually complete. Because if they don't turn over complete documents, they are violating some bedrock constitutional rights of the defendant.
I can see, though, where if you're trying to defend yourself, witnesses have come and gone or died or moved away or forgot or they're less reliable. Who does that advantage then, one side or the other?
That's going to advantage the defense, generally speaking, right? And that's something that, again, a lot of defense attorneys were pretty candid about. You know, the longer a case goes, you know, the less strong the prosecution's case might
be. Okay, but that's a double-edged sword for the defendant then, right? I got good news and bad news. Everybody's died or moved away, but it took 7 years for it to happen, and you still say you didn't do it. I wonder what percentage of these people, is this knowable, Megan Crapo, Chicago Tribune reporter, what percentage of these people would in fact be found not guilty or are not guilty of the crimes for which they're being held?
Well, generally, if you look at some recent history, it's 4 out of 5 people who are charged with murder who are going to end up convicted in some fashion, right? So we're looking at 20% of people who might be locked up for a long time pre-trial and end up not convicted of anything at all.
Did they have a recourse then? So say I spend 5 years in jail, 4 on average, and I get out because I was found not guilty. You held me for 4 years. Do I get any compensation for that?
You know, I think that would be interesting to look into. I'm not familiar with a lot of civil litigation on that front, right? I think maybe what you're getting at is looking at the constitutional right to a speedy trial, right? Was that violated in some sense? And if you want to talk about that, I can go on and on about it.
Well, I can answer that in one word, but let's pick it up here in just a minute. It's 11:46, and lots of texts are coming in, including this one. Isn't this the main reason for cashless bail? If you've got a question or comment, call or text 312-981-7200. Tribune reporter Megan Crapo covers city violence in the criminal justice system. So let's pick it up where we left a moment ago, Megan. What did you want to say before I cut you off there?
Well, we were talking a little bit about the constitutional right to a speedy trial. I mean, everyone who's watched 2 seconds of Law and Order or has, you know, been through a basic high school civics knows that that is a bedrock constitutional right. So, okay, in light of that, how does it happen that these cases last for so long without resolution? And I think the answer is that while there's a right to a speedy trial in the U.S. Constitution, the state statute in Illinois puts a certain kind of scaffolding around that, right? And here's how they try to do that. The law says that if you're charged with a crime, you are entitled to a trial within 120 days if you are in custody, right? Practically, how that works is you have to invoke it. You have to go into court and say, I demand a speedy trial. That's what starts the clock running, that 120 days. But practically speaking, if you do that before you've had a chance to see all the evidence against you, then that's not very smart. If you do that before you've had a chance to argue before a judge about what evidence comes in and out, that's not very smart, right? You're setting yourself up for failure if you demand a trial before seeing any of that. And as we talked about earlier, it can take years for all of that evidence to come in. So you're kind of stuck. You have this right, but it wouldn't generally not be terribly smart to use it a lot of the time.
Eric Zorn wrote about this in his Picayune Sentinel and patted you guys on the back for all the hard journalism work you did. To get more information, he wrote, reporters obtained dozens of costly transcripts of the give and take between lawyers and judges at court hearings. They observed more than 1,000 hearings for themselves, showing up at the courthouse or tuning in via Zoom. My favorite detail, Zorn said, so far, one case stuck in the system is so old that its evidence included the alleged use of a Blockbuster video card. If that's the case, then you've been in jail too long, unless you need to stay in jail. I mean, I do think that's sort of the elephant in the room, that maybe the lack of outcry. And by the way, I'm getting a lot of texts, and people are incredulous at this, Megan. They really can't believe this is happening. And it's outrageous that given the presumption of innocence, we lock people up for a very long time. But I think the elephant in the room is 8 out of 10 of these people will be found guilty. And the other 20% might be guilty, but they won't be found guilty. I guess I'm saying I suspect there's not a lot of sympathy for the objects in this case.
Well, you know, maybe that's the case. I mean, I think innocent until proven guilty is still, a bedrock of our American rights.
Yeah, I don't want to throw that away.
Of course. But OK, so look, if the sympathy angle doesn't get you, then maybe we think about like the taxpayer angle, right? So if you're locked up in Cook County for a number of years, it's Cook County taxpayers that are footing the bill for that. If you are locked up in Cook County for a couple of years, you get convicted, then you go into the state prison system where that the tax burden is borne across the state and not just in Cook County. So arguably, you know, Cook County is bearing a disproportionate level of the cost of keeping these people in custody.
Do you have a mind as to if you could start to pull some levers, what would make things go more expeditiously?
Oh, man. You know, I think that's a really difficult question to answer, because I hope what we've shown is that this is an extremely multifaceted problem and a very, very deeply rooted problem. I mean, what we have noticed, and I'll give you a little bit of a preview of a story that's supposed to run on Sunday, is that, you know, depending on the judge, cases move faster or slower, right? So there is some leeway, some power that element has over how cases are managed. You know, we talked to researchers who have suggested that, you know, the Cook County system is so dysfunctional on so many levels that the state Supreme Court should come in and take it over, right? I mean, they are technically, you know, have administrative power over all of the local courts. It's a huge issue, and there's really not just one answer.
Okay.
My suspicion is that's why, you know, after so long of everyone knowing this is an issue, it hasn't really been resolved.
Well, and it's not your job to resolve it, but maybe it's Tom Darts or maybe it's Tony Preckwinkle's. It's somebody's job. I mean, this falls under the purview of somebody, doesn't it?
So I like to think of that courthouse at 26th in California as falling at the intersection of like 5 or 6 bureaucracies, right? They all touch it. These bureaucracies all have potentially different interests. They all have different levels of funding and different motivations. Mm-hmm. And it gets a little messy when that happens, right?
John Williams, many defendants want to stay in Cook County because they are closest to visitors and it's better to serve time here instead of downstate, signed a retired judge. Well, I'm not exactly sure that that's the point here, retired judge. The point is that they're in Cook County awaiting trial, and I guess they'd rather be close to relatives, but the point is they shouldn't be there at all for 4 years awaiting trial.
We did hear a lot along those lines from lawyers, from judges, from people in the system who said, look, I mean, if you've got to be locked up, you're going to want to be closer to family. You're going to want to have that instead of getting shipped downstate first thing. Right. And that, you know, that makes a certain amount of sense. But what I'll also say is that we talked to a lot of defendants who are currently locked up in county jail, ran it past them, and they basically said, no, I mean, we are eager for trial. We don't like to be here.
Well, I think that's the point. John, isn't this the main reason for cashless bail? How does cashless bail intersect with this story, Megan?
So we focused on murder cases. And what I think is a common misconception about cashless bail is, you know, people think that everyone, no matter what they're charged with, is going to be out on the streets awaiting trial. That's not the intention, I believe, behind the cashless bail statute. Judges will still have an option to keep people behind bars if they find they meet certain criteria. Right now, I mean, we're looking at murder cases, and the odds that you are let out on any kind of bail, whether it's cashless, whether it's, a cash bond, the odds that that's an option for a murder case are very, very low.
Well, not according to a flyer I got last November from the local community Cook County News. That's a joke.
That's a joke. I got it.
Megan Crapo is a Chicago Tribune reporter. And so the next part in the series is Sunday. Maybe we can reconnect again next week, Megan. But thanks for doing what you're doing. I suspect some of the powers that be are reading this, too. And maybe this will affect some sort of change.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I could talk about this all day.